want some more? You sure you want some more? Okay. Well, you know, as has been apparent all weekend, you know, people have come up to me and said, you know, how did you know this speaker and then this speaker and this speaker? I don't know. A lot of prayer, a lot of thought. And I knew that this guy had to be Saturday night. Such a big night in my life 10 years ago. I knew this was the guy that you needed to hear tonight. I read his book, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I don't know whether Charlie Jones sent it to me or someone like that sent me his book. And I read The Ultimate Gift. And it was captivating. It was one of those stories that you couldn't put down, and it had that message all the way through it, the personal development message. And if you have not seen the movie, and I know some people in the room have because some of you sent it to me, and I want to thank you for it. What an incredible, incredible movie. Not about him. It's a story he wrote. Perhaps he'll share with us some of that tonight. But his story is touching. For those of you who were on the phone with us a couple of months ago, we did a call with Jim, and he had some pretty amazing things. Here's a guy who woke up at 29 years old, blind, went into a 9 by 12 foot room and, you know, stayed there for a while, like many of us do when we have our frustrations and disappointments and discouragements in life. And like every one of us, he had to make the decision whether he was going to stay in the room or whether he was coming out. And he came out, and because he's come out, he has touched so many lives. He created a television network. He made the decision that he was coming out of the room, and when he did, he was going to do something with his life. What I thought was the most profound thing that he said on that call, and I have repeated this to audiences ever since, that until the age of 29, he had never read a book. Since he's been blind, he's read a book every day. Mind-blowing. Please join me and give a big Claim Your Power Now welcome to Mr. Jim Scoville!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, it is great to be here. Each and every time I stand up in an audience, in front of an audience like this, somewhere in the world, to share for a few minutes about some things in this life I believe to be important. Every time I do this, I am always reminded of that time in my life when this was not possible. It was 19 years ago that morning I woke up. I instantly realized I had lost the remainder of my sight, and I knew right then I would live the rest of my life as a blind person. And the thoughts and the doubts and the fears that came over me that morning, those years ago, would be impossible to describe to you. As Vic said, I was 29 years old. I had never met a blind person, and I did not have a clue what I was going to do with the rest of my life. In fact, the only plan I could come up with that morning involved moving into that little 9 by 12 foot room in the back of my house. And in my little room, I gathered my radio and my telephone and my tape recorder. And that was my whole world 19 years ago. I really fully intended to never walk out of that room again. The thought of traveling a million miles and talking to almost a million people a year in arena events, the thought of running a television network with over 1,000 stations, writing a dozen books, making a movie, writing a weekly column read by 4 million people on 3 continents, or the thought of standing here tonight and talking to you was as foreign to me as going to the moon. I couldn't imagine it. So I sat in my little 9 by 12 foot self-imposed prison day after day after day, getting more and more depressed and more discouraged, and I'm quite certain I would still be there tonight, except for one thing, and that is the fact that I literally ached for people like you to come and talk to. So I want you to know what a thrill it is for me to be here tonight, and this is going to be a special time in your life. I always like to warn my audiences before I get too far. You know, you do have a blind guy wandering around up here tonight, and I'm not wired up to anything. And on a bad night, I can wipe out two or three rows here. So at least you people down front, you want to pay very, very close attention. I want to thank Vic and his team for putting together this wonderful event and being who he is and doing what they do. In every generation throughout the history of mankind, there has always been people who has taken upon themselves to disseminate the wisdom of the ages. And in our generation, one of the leading people is Vic Johnson. I want to thank him for being a part of this. The knowledge and the wisdom means absolutely nothing unless you get it in the hands of people that are going to apply it. And Vic does a great job of that. There's another very special person I have to thank. When you live your life like I do, as a blind person, and some of the most talented and gifted people in our field of television and movies and books and the business arena, some of the best people anywhere, are willing to dedicate their lives, or in my case, dedicate their eyes, to making it possible for you to do what you do. You take every opportunity, including ones like this, to simply say, thank you. Kelly Morrison is the marketing director for Narrative Television. She handles all the publicity for our almost 1,200 TV stations in North America. She handles all the publicity for my books, the movie now, all of our TV shows, the columns, makes all of these events possible for me, and is as good a friend as anybody ever had the right to have. Would you please help welcome my friend Kelly Morrison right back there. Kelly is also one of the most talented singers and songwriters you will ever hear. She has several albums out. When we put together the Ultimate Gift movie, I was very proud of the soundtrack I was able to work with the team and put together. And we put together Bob Dylan and B.B. King and Patsy Cline and Willie Nelson and Aaron Copland and the Seattle Symphony. But when it was time to write the signature song for the movie called Legacy, there was no one better, and Kelly did a tremendous job, and it's the music video on the DVD, and it is breaking all kinds of records now in the home video market after a tremendous run in theaters, and I'm just thankful to those of you who have seen it and shared it with your friends, and it's great to be here. Those of you who haven't seen the movie, you know, forget James Garner and Brian Dennehy and Lee Merriweather and the Academy Award nominee Abigail Breslin and all the great things in the movie. Forget all that. But near the end of the movie, there's a very brief scene with a limo driver. It's cinematic excellence is what it is, actually. You don't want to miss this. It goes by very quickly. There's only a couple lines. But this particular limo driver delivers those lines with such feeling. You'll want to see that. And be prepared to rewind and catch that several times because the guy looks exactly like me. Somehow it made sense to have the blind guy drive the limo. I nearly turned a message picture into an action adventure film. Every time I do this, I'm always reminded of the first time I went on stage after losing my sight. It's one of those experiences we all have that kind of keep us humble. I had just started the Narrative Television Network, and it was growing rather quickly, and then, as often happens to those of us who are in business and entrepreneurs, one morning you wake up and you realize you don't have a clue what you're doing. You have all this success and all this great stuff, and if that hasn't already happened to you, it will. It'll occur to you. It's probably already occurred to the people you work with. And one day I woke up and I realized I'm a blind guy from Oklahoma. I really don't know a lot about running a television network. So I made the mistake a lot of us make in business. I hired a consultant. Now, consultants are people that come and help you when you don't know what you're doing. They don't know what they're doing either, but they'll charge you an inordinate amount of money to share with you things they don't know and have never done in their lives. Well, I was so insecure, not only did I hire one, I came to L.A. right out here, and I hired two entertainment industry business consultants. You could tell they were entertainment industry business consultants because they had the ponytail and the briefcase. So you had the They're both things going there. Very, very unique guys. And I hired them to come to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where our network is headquartered, which you do know is the entertainment capital of North America right there in beautiful northeastern Oklahoma. And I hired them to come and tell me how to run this network. We were already running quite successfully. Well, they wandered around our offices and studios for several days and weeks and really annoyed everybody. And then they came into my office for the report. And they said, Jim, you're kind of new to the television industry, even though you have an Emmy Award and this is growing very, very quickly and things are wonderful. You've got to get out and meet all the station managers we have in these 1,000 stations all across North America that carry our program. That's expected of you in the television industry. You've got to get out and schmooze these people. Now, I wasn't even really sure what that was. I told her, you know, you may schmooze people over there in L.A., you know, and get away with that. You come to Oklahoma, you could get arrested just for schmoozing people like that. You know, can't run around Oklahoma schmoozing people. I'm telling you that. They said, Jim, you've got to go meet all these station managers in these 1,000 different towns and cities and everything. And I was just a little ways out of that 9-by-12-foot room I told you about. I could kind of stumble out of my house and fall into the back of a limo and ride to the office and stumble around there all day and reverse the process in the evening. But when they told me they wanted me to go to 1,000 different towns and cities and meet with these guys, I just said, guys, that's impossible. I'm not doing that. Get out of here. Come up with a better idea. You're getting paid way too much money. You're annoying everybody, so come up with a plan B. Well, a few days later, they came back down the hall and they said, Jim, we have a plan. Based on your experience in, as an Olympic athlete and your success in business and some of the things you've done, we believe we could book you into arenas and convention centers all across the country as some kind of motivational business success speaker. And then we'll invite those people in, our station managers, on a regional basis. And that way, we could kill two birds with one stone. Now, I never was really sure why these consultants like to kill birds with stones. But the next time you're dealing with a consultant, just remember, the more birds you can kill with the fewer stones, the better they like it. Well, that's when I asked the question that gets us all in trouble here in the new millennium. I said, when would I have to start? And they said, Jim, they book these big arena events at least 6 months in advance. So you wouldn't have to do a thing for at least 6 months. Well, I suspect your schedule's a lot like mine in that I don't know what I'm doing tonight after the program. So therefore, I'll agree to anything 6 months from now. In fact, if Vic is getting up a group to swim the English Channel or climb Mount Everest or something in the spring, just go ahead and sign me up tonight. I said, fine, I'll do it. Get out of here. Well, what seemed like a few days, certainly no more than a few weeks later, they come back down the hall to my office. And they said, Jim, it's time to go. Like one of those bad death row movies, you know. Blind man walking or something. They said, it's time to go. And I said, go where? And they said, it's time to make one of those speeches you promised us you would make. And I said, you clowns told me I had 6 months. And they said, Jim, trust us. It's been a full 6 months. You see, they always lie to the blind guy. And they think they get away with it. And in reality, they do get away with it. I just like to let them know that I know they get away with it. I said, okay, where are we going? They said, Jim, you're going out to the West Coast where you will be the motivational speaker for 14,000 state government workers. Now, if anybody here works for the state government or knows anybody works for the state government or even discovered anyone doing any work for the state government, you'll please excuse my next comments, but I thought being a motivational speaker for the state government workers was something really close to raising the dead, if you know what I mean. Well, our vice president, Kathy Harper, and I, we got on the plane and we flew out and I'm standing backstage in this huge arena, and I'm really nervous. It's the first time I've made a speech since I've lost my sight. And I'm trying to remember, now was it 12 steps or was it 13 to the front of that stage? That can be really critical at a certain point in time. And I was trying to remember, where did they put all those potted palm trees? You guys travel a lot, and you're from all over the country. If you ever run into the man or woman, whoever it was, that decided they should go into arenas, convention centers, television studios, right where a blind guy might be working, and decided to put potted palm trees up all over the place, if you run into that individual, would you tell him I'd like to visit with them? Because over the last few years, I've had kind of a close personal relationship with some of those potted palm trees. Well, I'm standing backstage and I'm really nervous. And when you're blind, you pay really close attention. You're really aware of everything around you. And I could just kind of tell, I could kind of sense that someone had come up and they were standing right here next to me. You ever had anybody kind of standing in your space, you know, a little too close for comfort? Well, there was somebody standing right here and they weren't making any noise. Now, folks, if we have a chance to meet later this evening after the program or at some point in the future, you have got to make noise. If you don't make noise, I won't like you. I may not like you anyway, but if you don't make noise, we don't have a chance. Well, this person standing right here, I could just sense they're there and they're not making any noise. I'm standing back there and I'm really nervous, and I turn to Kathy and I say, Kathy, I'm really tense here. I got to go raise these people from the dead, and I forgot where the potted palms are, and I think there's somebody standing here. She said, Jim, I don't know how to tell you this, but there's a guy standing right next to you and he's holding up a note in front of your face for you to read. I said, you got to be kidding. What does this guy's note say? She said, the note reads, I am deaf. Can you help me locate the front desk? So I turned to the deaf guy. I said, no, I'm blind. I can't help you find nothing. So I turned to Kathy and I said, what's he doing now? She said, he's holding the note closer. I explained it to him even louder, and we never did get together on that thing. And somewhere there's still a poor deaf man wandering around looking for the front desk, and if you run across him while you're here this weekend, I would appreciate it if you would help him out. Well, that pretty much ends the intellectual part of our program this evening. There are two things, and really only two things, that I want to make deadly sure you know when you leave this room, that you may or may not have known when you came into this room. And if you know these two things, when you leave this room, I will feel as if I have accomplished my mission here this evening. And the first of those two things I want to make sure you know when you leave this room is that you have one and only one God-given right in this world, and that's the right to choose, and you are who you are and where you are in every area of your life because of the choices you've made in the past. Now, as we travel around the world and tell a million people a year that you are where you are because that's where you chose to be, a lot of people don't like that because we have become a society of people that loves to blame the other guy. Doesn't matter how bad my life is, as long as I got someone to blame it on. So when I show up and say you are where you are because that's where you chose to be, people will say things to me like, Jim, I know my life isn't what it should be. I'm not reaching my goals. I'm not living up to my potential. I'm not walking out my destiny. But Jim, if you had ever met my wife, you would know why I'm a failure. Or if you knew my husband, this would make sense to you. And besides that, My boss is an idiot, and the weather's too hot, and the taxes are too high. And besides that, Jim, I'm a middle child. Or whatever their lousy excuse is for the way they live their lives. Right now, this is free of charge. I'm going to give you the Jim Stovall one-size-fits-all, 100% money-back guaranteed excuse for all situations. So the next time your life, personally, professionally, financially, is not turning out the way you want it to, don't blame somebody else. Just whip out the Jim Stovall one-size-fits-all, 100% money-back guaranteed excuse for all situations. And it works just like this. You find the nearest mirror, you look directly into that thing, and you say the magic words. You say, I guess I really didn't want it that bad. It works every time. Because only when you accept the fact that you are where you are, because that's where you chose to be, only then can you live in the assurance that today and every day of the rest of your life will be what you want it to be starting tonight. You exercise your right to choose. And you make a quality decision. I was traveling on a plane not too long ago. It's the way I generally like to fly. I'm sorry, when you're a blind guy, you got to do that once in a while just to make sure you guys didn't all leave, you know? I mean, I've given some of my best material to an empty arena, just 8 guys out there sweeping up. Doesn't really bother me, I just like to know. Well, I got on the plane, found my seat, sat down, stowed my luggage, got my seatbelt on. You know, if you're a blind guy, you're having a pretty good day. There's a lot can go wrong in that process. This guy got on, sat down next to me, and I introduced myself. And as some of you know, I was an Olympic athlete, a weightlifting champion. And I turned to this guy. This is the kind of guy, if they ever add a new event to the Olympics that I would call the marathon bad attitude, if they ever have that in the Olympics, he'll have a gold medal too. He had the worst attitude of any single individual I'd ever met. Now, this is quite an accomplishment. You just don't wake up one morning and be a world-class bad attitude competitor like that. This is something you've got to hone and develop over many years of hard effort. Well, I introduced myself to this gentleman. He immediately told me he did not like this airline. He did not like the city we were in. He did not like the airport we would be connecting through. He did not like our final destination. In fact, I don't think he liked me, but we didn't get that far into the conversation. Those of you who travel a lot, you know, there's 2 kinds of flights. There's the conversation flight, and then there's the headset flight. Solely determined by who you are sitting next to. Well, on this particular flight, I developed a 3rd category. It's called the high-volume headset flight. Well, we took off, and in a few minutes, the nice young lady, the flight attendant, comes down the aisle and said, "Gentlemen, we're going to be serving your dinner here in a few moments. Would you like the chicken or the beef?" I said, "I believe I'd have the chicken this evening." Then she turns to my Olympic seatmate here and said, "Sir, would you like the chicken or the beef?" He said, "It doesn't matter." She said, "Well, sir, we have plenty of both the chicken and the beef on board. Which would you prefer?" He said, "It doesn't matter." She said, "Sir, you are a first-class passenger here on our airline. It's my job to give you extraordinary service. So could I bring you the chicken or the beef?" He said, "It doesn't matter. Just get out of here and bring me something." A real ray of sunshine, you know what I mean? One of those guys that can brighten up a whole room just by leaving. Well, after a few minutes, she comes back down the aisle and gives me the chicken dinner and gives him the beef. Now, I have a Braille watch so I could check this out, so I could time this, because I knew someday I'd be telling you this story. For the next 41 minutes on that flight, he told me everything you could imagine and some things you could not imagine that were wrong with the beef dinner and why he wished he had the chicken. And then I realized, that's the way most people live their lives. There's a few people that make the right decisions. They're the healthy, wealthy, happy, successful people that get whatever they want out of this life. There's a few people that make the wrong decisions. They live in places like San Quentin and Leavenworth, and they don't have a lot to worry about. And then there's the vast majority of people you will ever meet in your life who never make a decision at all. They spend more time planning their three-day weekend than they do what are they going to do for the rest of their lives. And if you don't get anything else out of our brief time together here this evening, I want you to understand this life we're living right now, this is not a practice game. This is the Olympics and the World Series and the Super Bowl all rolled up into one. And if you don't feel that kind of power and passion about what you do all day, every day, you either need to find something new to do or you need to find a new attitude. And tonight would not be too soon, because at best, life is too short and we all have far too much to do. You have the right to choose. The second thing I want to make sure you know is that you're sitting there right now in that chair, simply one quality decision away from anything you want, because you change your life when you change your mind. That's the most dynamic concept you will ever encounter. Everything you'll ever do and know and have and love and create and give is based on the fact that you change your life when you change your mind. I don't see any better tonight than I did 19 years ago when I walked out of that little room as a totally blind person. But my whole world has changed, because somehow in the process of losing my sight, I captured a vision of who I could be. And that's what's going to happen to you before you get out of that chair in just a few moments. You're going to capture a vision of who you could be. Because, you know, we all had those dreams, those goals, those ambitions. Remember when you were a teenager or a young adult? Man, you were going to change the world. You were going to be this, do this, have this, create this, give this. You were going to make the world a better place. And then somewhere between there and here, this thing we call life sets in. And we get so busy making a living that we forgot to create a life. Well, I came here tonight to tell you the biggest dream you ever had in your life is alive and well. You may not have thought about it in 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, but the biggest dream you ever have is alive and well. And the only thing you got to do to activate it is sit right there in that chair and say, yeah, I'm going to do that. I always wanted to do that. That is why I was put on this planet. That will be done. I don't know how to do it, when to do it, where to do it, who to do it with. I don't know where to get the money. I don't know anything about it, but I'm going to do that. And your whole world will change tonight, because your mind, your soul, your spirit, it's a marvelous thing. Your brain is programmed to find what you want. And up until tonight, any time you thought about that big dream, that one deep down, the one that's scaring you to death, up till now, whenever you've thought about that, whether you realize it or not, you've instructed your mind to think of an excuse. Yeah, I'd like to do that, but I got to do this and this, and I don't know how to do it, and I don't know anything, and I don't have all this going for me. And your mind will find an excuse. But the minute you sit there, right there in that chair where you are, and you go into that little voting booth in the middle of your soul that only you and God know about it, and you reach up there and vote yes for that big dream, your whole world changes. Because starting then, every time you think about that big dream, instead of finding an excuse, you've instructed your mind to find me a solution, find me a way to make that happen, and your mind will find one. It's just that simple. I remember that day I walked out of that room. And the first day I walked out of that room, I didn't get a gold medal or an Emmy award or make $1 million or a movie or write a book or make a speech or do anything else. I walked 52 feet to the mailbox. And that's the day that changed my life. Because when I reached out and I touched that mailbox, something really amazing happened. My foot touched the curb there right at the edge of my street. And I realized something in that moment I had never realized before. I realized that I lived on a magical street. Because I realized that street that it took me months to get out of that room and get to 52 feet away. I realized that street was attached to another street, which was connected to another street, which intersected with still another. And I realized that magical street I lived on would take me anywhere in the world I wanted to go. And it did, and it has, and it still does. And so will yours. But nothing will happen until you say yes to that big dream. And some of you are going to do that tonight. And the person that will get out of your chair will be totally different than the person that sat down. 20 years from now, you'll remember tonight. You won't remember me or anything I said, but you'll remember that's the night I said yes to the big dream. You change your life when you change your mind. Everything else is just details. Someone asked Conrad Hilton, when did you know you'd be a success in the hotel business? And he said, I knew I would when I was sleeping on a park bench. Once you light the fuse of that dream in your imagination, nothing else matters. Now, people ask me all the time, Jim, if it's just that simple, if all you got to do is exercise your right to choose and make a quality decision, and you change your life when you change your mind, why do so many people fail? Well, it's called the spider monkey syndrome. Some of you may have heard about spider monkeys. Spider monkeys are little tiny primates, not that tall. And they look like human beings. They live in the tallest trees in the most dense jungle in the Amazon basin in South America. And for years, people tried to capture the spider monkeys. And they were frustrated in every attempt. First, they tried to capture the spider monkeys with these big nets. But the spider monkeys were too fast and they were too small, so they could either run around the nets or slip through the holes. So next, they tried to shoot them with these dart guns with tranquilizers. But they were too high up in the trees with too many leaves and branches in between. And they were frustrated in every attempt to capture the spider monkeys until one of the natives showed up and demonstrated how to do that. And I'm going to share that with you tonight. So when you go back home and someone says, what did you learn at that weird meeting in L.A.? You tell them, I learned how to capture a spider monkey. Now, it may not seem like a big deal to you tonight, but if there's an outbreak of these in your neighborhood, you'll be the only one on your block knows how to take care of this problem. You'll thank me then. Now, the way you capture a spider monkey is you take a clear glass bottle and one peanut. You put the peanut inside the bottle. You put the bottle with the peanut inside of it at the base of a tree, right there next to the trunk, and you leave. And while you're gone, that little spider monkey, he'll look way down there and he'll see that peanut in the bottle. And eventually he'll climb down the tree, put his little hand in there, grab that peanut, making his fist too large to get out of the bottle, and you have captured a spider monkey. You can come back an hour, a day, or a week later, he'll be standing there holding on to that peanut that he really didn't want in the first place, and he can't eat it anyway. You can put a whole bag of peanuts there right next to him, and he'll just stand there holding on to that one peanut, not doing him a bit of good. You can put bananas all around him there, and he'll just stand there holding on to that peanut. He'll eventually starve to death if you don't help him. You can have other little spider monkeys running around there playing little spider monkey games. And he'll just stand there all alone holding on to that one peanut. You can take away his freedom. You can take away his very life. And he'll stand there holding on to that one peanut that he didn't want in the first place, and he can't eat it anyway. Because, ladies and gentlemen, after conducting exhaustive research myself, becoming one of the world's leading authorities on the subject of spider monkeys, I've read two entire books on the subject, which is pretty much the entire body of knowledge as it relates to the species. I believe I can say to you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, without fear of contradiction, spider monkeys are stupid. That's right. But before we laugh too much at the spider monkeys, we've got to ask ourselves, what is it in our life we're holding on to that we didn't want in the first place and it's not doing us any good and it's keeping us from everything we ever wanted in our lives? If you want success, you got to let go of failure. Sounds simple, but it's not. If you want love and joy and peace, you've got to let go of bitterness and anger and unforgiveness. As Gandhi said, you will not be punished for your unforgiveness. You're punished by it. You got to let go of all that garbage. I've made a special arrangement with the hotel here tonight. Those of you who are carrying around a lot of that garbage and bitterness and anger and fear and resentment and unforgiveness, I have permission from the hotel. You can just leave that right there under your table or next to your chair tonight. They'll clean it up later. Don't carry that stuff around anymore. Don't do it. Boy, it's fun to be here. You know, we've been doing so many of these large forum events. I never get to meet anybody. And you guys are really out there, and I've already gotten to meet a few of you, and it's really nice to know there's really people out there. You know, and I thought back at how I got to be a speaker, you know, and how this whole thing has happened, and now a lot of you that know me probably know me through the book or the movie The Ultimate Gift or some of the other things, and how that whole ultimate gifts thing happened. I never intended to be a speaker. I was invited once to speak to the National Cable Television Association, because I'm not one of these speakers that wrote a book or read a book 20 years ago and he's still out talking about it. I'll be back at my office next week doing the things we're talking about here. You know, leave the cave, kill it, drag it home. And so I was trying to, you know, start my business, and I was calling on broadcast stations and networks and cable operators, selling them our programming and our network and the various things I was doing. And then somebody invited me to make a speech at the Cable Television Association. And, you know, I thought, well, now I could just talk to everybody at once. Well, after the speech, apparently it went well, so somebody came up to me and he said, would you come talk to my group? And I said, I would. And he said, would five be okay for a fee? I didn't know if he meant dollars, hundred, or thousand. I had no clue. I said, sure. And then I found myself being a professional speaker. I've never really tried to do it. I mean, would you hire me or anything? People just call. So I found myself on a tour on the West Coast here, and I was sandwiched between Dr. Dennis Whately and Robert Schuller, and the three of us were kind of doing this tour. And all of a sudden, I'm some kind of speaker, you know? And one day, we're sitting backstage, and Dr. Schuller says to me, my friend Jim, he really talks like that. It's really strange to order a burger with Dr. Schuller. He said, my friend Jim, I believe you should write a book. I believe you should write a book now. And I said, Dr. Schuller, I can't read a book. Why should I write a book? Actually, as Vic says, thanks to a high-speed tape player and Library for the Blind, I read a book every day. I listen at 800 words a minute, and it changed my life. Some of the greatest people of recorded history are waiting to tell you all their secrets, and all you got to do is open the book and read it. So Dr. Schuller says, you should write a book. Well, I said, I don't want to write a book. Don't know anything about it. About that time, the gentleman introduced me. I go out into the arena. I do my hour. And when I walk off stage, Dr. Whately is standing there. And he said, Jim, we've got it all worked out. Well, I honestly thought he meant the ground transportation to the plane. I said, good. What'd you guys work out? He said, well, while you were out there, Dr. Schuller called his publisher, and he'll be endorsing your book, and they'll be publishing it, and I'll be writing the foreword, and they need your manuscript in about 90 days. So that's how I became an author. I wrote down my experience of losing my sight and becoming a national champion Olympic weightlifter and starting a business and all the things of losing my sight. I put it out in a book called You Don't Have to Be Blind to See. And it started selling, and I thought that was great. It was a good experience. Everybody ought to do that once in their life, you know? And then about a year later, the publisher called me and said, Jim, it's going great. We need to get your follow-up book. I said, exactly what is a follow-up book? They said, that's the book you come out with next to capitalize on all the success of your first book. And I said, if you'd told me that, I wouldn't have written everything I knew in the first book. But I came out with a book called Success Secrets of Superachievers, which put together about 75 people I'd worked with on stage and on television and in the movies. Everybody from Charlton Heston, Katharine Hepburn, Zig Ziglar, Art Linkletter, Dr. Ruth, and the Dalai Lama. They're all in the book. And they called again, and they said, we need another book. So I wrote a biography called The Way I See the World. And then they said, we need another book. I said, don't you have anybody else wants to write any books over there? I mean, I can't be the only guy. Well, then Steve Forbes called me, and he and I and Donald Trump did a book together called American Success Stories. I mean, I was running out of stuff. I'd written everything I knew and a few things I only kind of suspected. So when they called again, There's a lady in my office, if you ever come to visit me, and you're all welcome to in Tulsa. There's a lady has an office in the front, and she types everything I say into a computer, and it turns into books and newspaper and magazine columns and screenplays and all the things we do. And I said, Dorothy, we're going to write a novel. She said, you know anything about that? I said, no, but I wrote everything I knew, so I got to make something up here. And that first day, all I had in mind was the first line of the book. I don't know, it was stuck in my mind. It was my 80th year of life on earth and my 53rd year of practice of the law that I was to undertake an odyssey that would change my world forever. And then I thought, who said that and what's he talking about? And then over the next year, over the next 5 days, what emerged became known as the ultimate gift. No edits, no rewrites. The way I dictated it word for word in 5 days between my meetings and phone calls there running my television network became the ultimate gift. And it's now sold between 4 and 5 million copies around the world and has changed my world and the world of many others. It's taught in several thousand schools as a curriculum and read everywhere from the White House and the Vatican to the penitentiaries and homeless shelters, and not a lot of difference sometimes. Then a couple years after that, a major movie studio called and said, Jim, we want to make a movie. Well, I've been in the television business long enough to know what they do when they turn these into a movie. And I said, I've got to keep control of the script and the content or we won't do it. And after a year, they delivered me a script that was so far removed. They liked my characters and my story. They just didn't want to keep the message. Said, I'm not interested. Thank you very much. Then another studio called, and I had a similar experience. And they wanted to turn it into an R-rated film. I don't know why. I have no problem. I mean, movies like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan need to be R-rated. They deal with horrific content matter. But what they wanted to do is take our movie and one of the young ladies, movie stars, very attractive young lady, they wanted her to enter the movie coming out of the shower in the morning for no reason other than they wanted to do that. And I said, we've got 80-year-old James Garner and 78-year-old Brian Dennehy. We don't have them in the shower. We just let all those people assume Brian Dennehy took a shower. So I said, I'm not interested. And I'd pretty well resigned myself to the fact we weren't going to make a movie when my friend Rick Eldridge from Disney called and he was making some movies and he had just finished a film on the life of the golfer Bobby Jones called Stroke of Genius. And he said, Jim, let's make a movie. And I said, Rick, I've been through all this before and I'm not in the book business or the speech business or the movie business. I'm in the message business. And I got to have my message. And he said, you're in control. Do whatever you want. So we wrote the script, and I've interviewed a lot of great people on television, and one of them is Paul Newman. And I wanted Mr. Newman to play the lead role. And I called him, and I said, Mr. Newman, got this. He said, I've read your book, heard about the screenplay. He said, Jim, my health is really bad, and I promised Robert Redford I would do my last film with him. And I said, Mr. Newman, I wouldn't do this for anybody but you, but I'm willing to write a part in this picture for Redford if he wants to be in our movie. I can't pay him, but I'd be happy to have you. You can work that out. Well, anyway, Mr. Newman's health just wouldn't permit him to do the project. And then we were contacted by James Garner. And he read it and said, I've been making movies for 50 years, and this says what I want to say in my last movie. As I leave the public arena, I want to leave it saying what the ultimate gift says. And I said, Mr. Garner, are we going to have any problem? I mean, it's kind of known all over the industry that I had approached Newman about doing this. Is it going to be a problem? He said, no, son, I got rich and famous doing stuff that Newman didn't want to do. He said, how much money you got to make this movie? And I said, well, it's kind of a small budget. $17 million we're putting up. It's hard to say $17 million is small. But anyway, he said, you don't need me. You need a partner. And he became our partner and worked for nothing, for just a part of the deal, which allowed us to get Brian Dennehy and Lee Merriweather and some amazing, amazing talent. And one of the great surprises was Abigail Breslin. And those of you who've seen the movie who will, she had done Little Miss Sunshine that she got nominated for the Academy Award for, but it hadn't come out yet. So we had no idea what we were getting. And when you watch The Ultimate Gift, get ready to fall in love with a little 9-year-old girl. In every generation, there's one or two kids that have that kind of talent, and Abigail's one of them. And she was just amazing. Then after we finished the picture, I got together with my partners, and I said, guys, if we believe in this message before 20th Century Fox releases it, we should take 6 months and give it away. If we believe it, let's give it away. And we contacted charities and philanthropies and community foundations all across the country, and 300 of them showed the movie to 100,000 people across the country to raise money for local causes and charities and schools. And I'm very proud to say that they're still counting the money, but as we speak, we raised a little over $27 million that stayed in local communities all across the country. And those of you who get the DVD from Blockbuster or Netflix or Amazon, like I said, just don't miss the limo driver. That's the important part. For the last 10 or 12 years, Kelly and I have been all across North America on this torturous thing they politely call a book tour. Now, if you haven't made this mistake in your life, I'm going to save you a lot of strain right here. Don't ever write a book. See, you think you did all the work when you wrote the book, but then they send you out on this tour. They try to kill you is what they try to do. And I have figured these publishers out. You see, they have more people that want to write books than they have slots for authors, so they send you out on the tour and they hope you don't come back. And apparently a lot of writers don't. They just get lost in book tour land. And you go from city to city, day after day after day, and you'll land somewhere and you'll do 5 radio interviews, 3 TVs, 2 newspapers, a magazine, get on a plane, go to the next place, do the next day. And after a while, you don't even know who you are, and you do all these shows. You know, like, Good Morning, Buffalo. Wake Up, Cleveland. Go to Bed, Omaha. All these shows. And after a while, and you meet with hundreds of reporters, you realize that there's only 7 questions. I don't know what people do in journalism school for 4 years. See, I think the first day of journalism school, they give you the sheet with the 7 questions on it. And the rest of your time there, you work on makeup and getting a good blow dry is how you do that right there. And so we got the state government workers and now the media. I always like to have a balanced program. And one of the questions I'm asked more than any other is, Jim, out of all the people you've met with and worked with, movie stars, the athletes, the politicians, the millionaires, the billionaires, the people you've worked with on stage, on television, and in the movies, who has impacted your life the most? And I thought a lot about that because from a guy from Oklahoma who was stuck in a 9-by-12-foot room he thought he'd never get out of the rest of his life, it's been my privilege to work with some of the greatest people of the 20th and now the 21st century. When I started doing interviews on television in the early 90s, my very first interview, I never did local or regional TV, my very first national interview was with Katharine Hepburn. Then the next week was Jimmy Stewart and Michael Douglas and Frank Sinatra. We had a good month. Dreams come true. Don't ever let anybody tell you otherwise. So I was trying to think, who has impacted my life the most? And there is one guy, and I want to introduce you to him as I begin to wind down my part of your program. When I was 17, I had a plan for my life. It had nothing to do with what I do now. But when I was 17, I knew everything. Those of you who have teenagers, you're experiencing this. Someday I'm going to write a book called Stuff I Learned After I Already Knew Everything. Well, I had a plan for my life. It involved being an All-American football player, going to the beloved University of Oklahoma and playing on the national championship team, and then going directly into the NFL and playing for the Dallas Cowboys. Thank you. There's always one in every crowd. Here in L.A., I'm glad to get one. And I was well on my way, and things were looking good. And then during a routine physical to go play a year ball, and you guys know how it goes, they stick you, poke you, prod you, do all this stuff, and I had to take the eye test, and they put the drops in there and shine the light in there, and you have to read the chart. And then a second doctor showed up and put some more drops in there, and I had to read his chart. And finally, a third doctor showed up and did some more tests, and then the three doctors took me down a long hall and sat me down at a conference table. And they said, "Jim, we're not sure why, and we're not sure when, but we do know someday you're going to be totally blind, and there's not one thing we can do about it." And your whole world just stops right there. I instantly knew I was not going to go in the NFL and play for the Dallas Cowboys. You know, at that time and to this very day, there has never been a blind guy play for the Dallas Cowboys. Now, if you saw that Detroit game last year, you would really question that. I called Jerry Jones. I said, "Jerry, are you signing up the blind guys now or what?" He said, "No, Jim, those guys have some other problems." I think he called it unemployment was their main problem. Well, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, so I went back to my hometown and I enrolled in college. College is sometimes a great place to go when you don't know what you want to do, because in many cases it's taught by people that don't know what they want to do. So you got the state government workers and the media, now the educator. I think we're on a roll tonight. And near where I went to college, there's a school for blind kids. And I don't know what motivated me. I don't know if I was trying to learn more about it or help out or make some kind of bargain with God or what I was doing. But I went over to the school for blind kids, and I met with the principal. And I said, "Look, I'm 17 years old. I have no background, no training, no experience in working with blind kids. And I'd like to teach here." Well, you can imagine how excited they were to see me. "Oh, yeah, here's the guy we've been looking for right here. Let's get him on the faculty immediately." But she was kinder than that, and she said, "Jim, if you really do want to do this, we do have one kid you could kind of work with one-on-one." I said, "Well, I was kind of thinking of having my own class, actually." She said, "Well, you either work with the one kid or you get out of here." Well, folks, when you don't have any choice, it's not that hard to make a decision. I said, "Fair enough. What do I teach this kid?" And they said, "Jim, that's just it. Christopher is 4 years old. He's totally blind. He has a lot of other physical problems. And we have determined that he's never going to grow or learn or advance or develop any more than he already has. So what we want you to do is keep him quiet and keep him away from the other kids so at least they can learn their lessons, because Christopher won't learn any more than he already knows." Ladies and gentlemen, don't you dare ever forget, ladies and gentlemen, that we always live up to the expectations we have of ourselves, or those expectations that we allow other people to place upon us. And I hate to be the one to come here to your wonderful event and tell you the bad news, but life is not fair. It is great, it's grand, it's wonderful. It's the only game in town, but life is not fair. And in this world, we don't always get what we want or need or deserve or earn, but you will forevermore and inevitably get what you expect. And if your life isn't turning out the way you want it to, just check your expectations and you'll find out you're just about where you thought you'd be. But the beautiful thing about that is you will be where you think you will, starting right now. Well, the only training they gave me to work with Christopher was two things. They said, "Jim, number one, you got to keep his shoes tied. He's never learned how to tie his shoes. We're afraid he's going to trip on a shoelace and fall and hurt himself. And the only other thing is you got to keep him away from the stairs. It's very hard for blind people to climb up and down the stairs, and we're afraid he's going to fall down the staircase and injure himself. Other than that, we don't care what you do. You just keep him quiet, keep him away from these other kids so they can learn their lessons." Well, that first day I went out to meet Christopher, he was very, very small, much smaller than you would expect a four-year-old child to be. And he was indeed totally blind, and he had some other physical problems. And that first day, Christopher and I sat down, and we had a serious conversation. And I said, young man, before I leave here, no matter how many weeks or months or years it takes, you are at least going to learn how to tie your shoes and climb the stairs. And he said, no, I can't. And I said, yes, you can. And he said, no, I can't. And I said, yes, you can. And he said, no, I can't. If you've ever spent any time with a four-year-old, you know, they can do that all day long, back and forth, just wear you right down. I'd never seen anything quite like that at that point in my life. Well, we began working every day. We were working on learning how to tie our shoes and climb the stairs. And meanwhile, I'm attending the university, and my eyesight finally got to the point where I couldn't read anymore. I couldn't get around on my own anymore. I didn't know then. I did not know then what you know right now. I didn't know I could exercise my right to choose and make a quality decision and change my life by changing my mind. That easy, that simple, that quick. Just bang. I didn't know I could do that. I would have given $1 million that day to know what you know right now. Because it's been worth a lot more than that to me in every area of my life. But I didn't know that, so I prepared to drop out of college, and I went over to the school for blind kids for what I thought would be my last day, and I got there early, and I met with the principal, and I said, look, now I'm going blind myself, and I won't be able to come here and work with Christopher anymore, so today will have to be my last day, because I can't make it. Well, I didn't know they dropped Christopher off early that day, and he's standing outside the open door, hearing this whole conversation. So as I went out to tell him goodbye and tell him I loved him and tell him I hope someday somebody else would show up and spend some time with him, he turns to me and says, yes, you can. And I said, no, I can't. And he said, yes, you can. And I said, no, I can't. And he said, yes, you can. And as I was preparing to explain to this poor, uneducated, obnoxious, ignorant four-year-old child, this is different, kid. This is not like learning how to tie your shoes. This is like going to a university. As I was preparing to explain that to him in a way he would understand, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Stovall, either get up and do something with your life or quit lying to the kid. Because if it works, it works for tying your shoes and climbing the stairs and finishing college and creating lives and careers and relationships and lifestyles that are worthy of you and worthy of your best efforts. And if it doesn't work, let's quit lying to the kid. 3 years later, I graduated with honors from that university with 2 degrees. And that same week, I had the privilege of my life with what little vision I had left. In fact, one of the last things I ever really remember seeing was then 7-year-old Christopher climb up those 3 flights of stairs, turn and sit on that very top step, and tie both of his shoes. And that's the person that's impacted my life the most. It's not the movie stars, the millionaires, the billionaires, the athletes, the politicians. It's a 4-year-old child that came into my life for 3 years to teach me the unadulterated wisdom of the ages, which is quite simply this. When it comes to that big dream deep down inside you, the answer is always yes, you can. That dream would not have been put inside of you if you did not have the capacity to achieve it. So the question is never can we. The question is always will we. And everything hangs in the balance there at the fork in the road of your life. Will you? 6 weeks after that miraculous day, when Christopher climbed the stairs and tied his shoes, Christopher died of a brain tumor, which was the condition that had caused him to lose his sight in the first place. And as I was attending his funeral, one of the other teachers said to me, you know, isn't it a shame? We'll never know what he could have done had he been given a full life. And I said, wait a minute, hold the phone. He has made his contribution because everything I do from this day forward, I owe to him. They tell me I have shared that story with multiple millions of people now, live, just like you and I are talking now. And many of them have done what a few of you are going to do, which is use Christopher's example as a platform to examine your life, your goals, your dreams, your ambition. Ask yourself, is this really the best? Is this why I was put here? Am I getting it all or am I leaving a lot on the table? Exercise your right to choose, make a quality decision, and change your life by changing your mind. You know, somebody was asking me, how did you learn how to sign your name? Because somebody told me I've signed almost 1 million books now. And I was trying to think about that, and it was an amazing journey.
led by a very special man. Right after I was diagnosed, I was going to lose my sight. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went to our state fair, and I thought I'll wander around here all day and try to forget about going blind. And two amazing things happened to me that day. One of them led to me learning how to sign my name. The other led to the Olympics. I was wandering around the fair, and they had this exhibition of these guys that had been on the Olympic team, the previous Olympics. And I thought, that's something a guy could do even if he was blind. And 4 years later, I was our national champion, and very proud to be on the Olympic team. And then, thank you. And then when I wandered out of that building, I wandered down the midway there, and they had this big arena, and it said free concert. I didn't even know who was playing, but free really fit my budget at that time. I didn't know what time the concert started. I was in this daze because I'd just been told I'm going blind. And I wander in and I sit on the front row because there's no one else here. I don't know when this concert's ever going to start. And as I sat there and daydreamed and thought about all the things that had not happened and would never happen and could possibly happen in my life, this arena fills up without me even noticing it. The next thing I know, I hear this big voice says, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the one and only Ray Charles." Ray walked onto that stage and mesmerized thousands of people. And I thought, wow, if a guy could do that, maybe this little guy from Oklahoma could do something. 10 years later, I was booked as a main speaker in Madison Square Garden in New York, and it went really well, and the promoter was pleased, and he said, "Jim, would you stay over and do another Madison Square event next weekend? I'll either fly you back home or you can stay in New York." Well, I had some business to do. I said, "I'll stay in New York and do your meeting next week." He said, "I got an act at Carnegie Hall. You want to go Tuesday night?" I really didn't think so, but something said, "Find out." So I said, "Who you got?" He said, "I got Ray Charles." So I found myself once again sitting on the front row 10 years later, and Ray comes out and does his magic. And afterward, the promoter took me backstage and said, "Ray will talk to you in just a second. He's got to sign a few more autographs." And I said, "How does he sign his name? Because now I've been blind for almost 10 years. How does anybody sign their name?" And he said, "Who said that?" I said, "My name's Jim Stovall." He said, "Son, if anybody ever in your life thinks enough of you to want your autograph, the least you can do is learn how to do it." I said, "How do you do it?" And he said, "Well, I went down to the beach and I had someone write my name and then I could feel it and then I would trace it again and again and again." I said, "Ray, I'm from Oklahoma. We don't have a beach. But thankfully, we got a river that doesn't have any water in it most of the time. A lot of sand out there. And if the water hadn't come up yet, there's still about 10,000 Jim Stovalls out there." And I learned how to do that. Then on his last concert tour, one of the last stops he ever made, it's a performing arts center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I sat on the front row again, and afterwards I went backstage and I was talking to a few reporters, getting ready to say hello to Ray. And he said, "I hear you over there." He hadn't heard me in 10 years. He said, "I hear you over there, and you better be ready to sign something. And I'd give $1 million for it tonight." Somebody handed me one of Ray's pictures, and I signed to Ray Charles, Jim Stovall. And so I always think about that, and I would be privileged to sign your book. And always, as always, though, when you have a blind man with an ink pen, you do want to stand back. I can kind of mess you up. I want to thank you for this opportunity to be here. It means more than I can say. I can remember sitting in that little 9-by-12-foot room on an evening much like this, getting more and more depressed, more and more discouraged, more and more despondent, and sitting there broke and scared in the dark. The most magnificent thing I could think about, the most tremendous thought I could pull into my mind, the most wonderful concept of which I could conceive was not as special to me as getting to spend the last hour with you guys. And as always, I'll leave you with this. Hold on to your dreams and stand tall even when those around you would force you to crawl. Hold on to your dreams as a race you must run even when reality whispers you'll never be done. And finally, my friends, hold on to your dreams and wait for the magic to come, because on that miraculous day, your dreams and your reality will merge into one.
Thank you.